Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. Today is a very special episode for us. We are going to be exploring the MarTech scene today with one of our favorite people. And he's someone who is synonymous with the word MarTech and MarTech landscape and chief MarTech. I don't even have to make any deeper introduction than this. So welcome to the show, Scott. Nice to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here with you.
All right. I'll get straight to the key question that I wanted to ask you, Scott. You know, every year you come up with your MarTech landscape, and as you have said in your blogs, and also the kind of emotions that it triggers with many of us, it ranges from excitement to frustration. You know, it's like a myriad of emotions. And in fact, I love when you reacted to that, saying that it's not like Galileo going to the church and saying that the earth is revolving around the sun. So why do you think there is, this much kind of an outrage or a reaction when it comes to MarTech products, whereas you don't get the same kind of reaction for, say, agencies or service providers?
Yeah, it's a question I spend, I've spent many hours thinking about. I think there are two main reasons. One is, services and technology are different. I think for better or worse, marketers tend to think of services as being very ephemeral, that, you hire an agency to do a campaign for you or to, build a website or something. It happens over a relatively finite period of time and then it's done. And if the campaign didn't work, you don't hire that agency again. You hire another agency and you start over. And that new campaign isn't really held back by the previous campaign. You don't really back yourself into a corner with a lot of traditional marketing services versus like technology. Particularly when you're looking at buying, platforms and more of this, infrastructure technology. Yeah, this is not something that you just buy and then, we'll use this platform this year. And if we don't like it next year, we'll throw that all out and move to another platform. Technology tends to be, a much stickier investment. And so I think the stakes are a lot higher for marketers to make those choices well. Having more and more choices on the landscape, makes that seem more daunting. I think the other thing is, marketers have been hiring services companies, agencies for like decades, right? This is a very well-established set of practices in the marketing world. CMOs know how to evaluate agencies, how to run the engagement with them, what it's going to cost them, what reasonable expectations are. It's like, marketers are very savvy, agency management. Technology, though, right, this is still pretty new to most marketers. They don't understand it as well. They're not always clear how to be an astute buyer of this technology. And the fact that the technology is continuing to, innovate and change and disrupt and new, companies springing up, it doesn't make it any easier for, marketers to get their arms around that. And so, I think that's one of those two reasons are probably why, 30,000 agencies doesn't bother marketers anywhere near as much as like 3,000 MarTech companies would.
Right. And I would like to scratch that topic a little bit more, because based on what you just said and based on the question that Yag had earlier for you, on one hand, we have the ever expanding categories of MarTech tools, and yet every other day we have new innovative tools coming up which don't even fit into a specific category, right? Similarly, on the other hand, we have talked extensively about You have talked extensively about categories getting consolidated or being completely obliterated. For example, the death of predictive intelligence as a category, right? So my question to you, Scott, is how do you think organizations and in particular marketing teams should realign their MarTech stack, considering the fact that the landscape is so fluid and subject to a high degree of uncertainty?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So I've become a very big proponent of platform architectures in marketing. I'm obviously a little biased here. I mean, the work I do at HubSpot is helping HubSpot be a better platform for marketers. But yeah, my recommendation here isn't specific to HubSpot. You know, there's a number of other competing platforms in the space. And I think the important thing from a marketer's point of view is to say, you want to design your stack in a way that you have a relatively stable foundation, you know, like a major platform as your core, your system of record, you know, for customer data, your system of record for, you know, engagement management. And then at the same time, while you want a very stable foundation that you're not going to be changing every year, you want that foundation to be incredibly open. And this is where I see now really the big competition among the major players in MarTech is who can have the better ecosystem, you know, who can have better integrations with more apps or better apps, you know, and really make it easier for marketers to be able to add or substitute, you know, these more specialized apps in their stack and still have them all work well with that foundational system of record. So this is a work in progress. I would not say that the industry is by any means, achieved nirvana there. But I think that's the direction we're heading, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Right, and you just spoke about kind of having a core piece, and also a lot of integrations. In fact, I was recently going through this Pandium's report, which says that the fastest growing MarTech companies tend to have an average of about, like, say, 46 product integrations. And somewhere I think the median is about 17. But on the other side, you also spoke about ecosystems or platforms and, either even consolidation hasn't really happened. So in your view, what do you think? Is it like we have more favors in terms of point solutions, or is the direction going towards more platforms, or is it just kind of two factions of, say, MarTech belief systems?
Yeah, well, so here's what I find interesting is, in theory, and I think actually we're seeing this play out in practice as well, really strong platforms and consolidation at the platform level actually makes it easier for there to be just an explosion of more specialized quote-unquote point solutions apps that plug into those platforms. Because really, people love specialized tools. They love tool that, like, wow, this is the best influencer marketing tool ever. You know, this is the best, you know, website heat map. You know, I mean, they love their individual tools. The problem they've had with them in the past is like, okay, well, you know, yeah, I can get all these individual tools, but the burden is entirely on me as the marketer to figure out how to connect all this crap together. Versus like if we're really successful with this platform movement in the industry, then it's like, okay, I have a solid platform. Now I can pick these specialized tools from that platform's ecosystem. But the burden is no longer on me as a non-technical marketer to figure out how I connect this stuff. They kind of just plug in. And again, you know, I mean, the degree to which they just plug in, varies right now, depending on the app and depending on the platform. But, you know, it seems to be the direction where we're making a tremendous amount of progress.
And, in this, right, for example, every company or every product also tends to have their own marketplace. So does that impact the scene of a point solution, or are like still companies going towards ecosystems? And how does marketplace play out into this entire scene?
You know, again, this is part of the process of how people discover, what's available. I think beyond discovery, there's then, you know, can you remove friction, you know, from the process of actually, you know, trying or buying or, you know, installing these apps. And I also think, you know, I mean, one of the advantages of marketplaces is they help connect the community of users around that too. You know, like the simplest example of this are, you know, things like ratings and reviews. You know, if they're, you know, not just anyone can post a random review, but it's like, you know, okay, authenticated customers, you know, who have used a particular product are then able to, you know, leave a, you know, a well-evaluated review on it. All of a sudden, that information is so incredibly helpful. Having things even like understanding the popularity of products, like which ones get the most number of installs. I mean, if you think about this, like in a totally different world, like with, you know, say like the Android Play Store, Google Play Store for Android, or, you know, the Apple App Store for iOS. You know, I mean, those marketplaces are really well designed to make it easy for people to discover and then obviously just install and use, you know, what is literally a field of millions of products at this point. And so while I don't think MarTech is ever going to be quite that simple for a lot of reasons. I do think we can draw a lot of inspiration, you know, from that is like, okay, well, if that would be the ultimate nirvana, you know, asymptotically, like how close can we get to that?
Right. Makes a lot of sense. And before we move to the next question, we would like to take a quick break and thank our sponsors, which is Zest.is. So to the listeners, as you all know, Zest is a marketing content stream that sits on your Google Chrome browser as a new tab extension. And it's a platform where you can submit and curate high quality articles, podcasts, infographics, videos, and ebooks. It's a highly powered AI algorithm allows you to handpick your personalized content that is very specific to your taste.
And as marketers and content creators, I and Yag don't just use Zest, we are obsessed with it. We use Zest to promote as well as discover new content to and from like-minded marketing communities from around the world. You can sign up at zest.is/contentboost and get a $75 off on your first boost by letting them know that you heard it from the ABM Conversations podcast. And who knows, the boost might help Scott Brinker discover your content. And if it's good, he will tweet it to his 41,000 Twitter followers.
Excellent. Good plan.
Right. So I don't think we're done with on the topic of integration as of yet, because, you know, what Yag asked you kind of reminded me of this question, Scott. I remember sometime back in April, you spoke about the four types of integration somewhere in the internet world. And when people generally talk about integrations, at least in the marketing circles, it's either a simple yes-no conversation or it's about having one-way or two-way integration. But I think our listeners will benefit if you can go into the weeds of discussing what are those four types of integration. And once you break down each of them, I'll hopefully have another follow-up question to that.
Well, I love this question. Thank you for setting me up for this, because this is one of my favorite topics of... you know, when people talk about integrations, yeah, as you said, it tends to be, you know, this very superficial of like, does product A integrate with product B? You know, the answer is probably, well, yes. But how well it integrates between product A and product B, it turns out, right, there's just an incredible spectrum of possibilities. And so I think about it in four layers, data, workflow, UI, UX, and governance. And so to dig into each one of those for a bit, like data is actually what we think about for most integrations. Like, oh, well, do I get data from product A into product B? Yes, that's one way to do it. As you pointed out, right, you can have like a one-way just slinging data over the fence from one product to another, or you can have a more sophisticated data integration that actually synchronizes data both ways. It has rules in place for dealing with, you know, conflicts, exceptions, how to resolve that, how quickly, what's the speed by which these things are synchronized? Is it, you know, close to real time? Is it done once a week? I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you can do in like a better or deeper data integration. But that is just one layer. You know, the next layer is like workflow. Okay, so I've got all these different tools in my MarTech stack where, you know, there's a customer interaction on, say, my webinar tool. Do I have the ability to have that interaction trigger then some sort of workflow in my marketing automation platform, you know, that then follows up with a nurture email? And then depending on what the reaction is to that email, I might want to, you know, like trigger a change in the record in the CRM or send some sort of notification into, say, a collaboration tool for the sales team, like, you know, over Slack or something. I mean, so there's basically this like flow of how both customer journeys and internal processes work. And so a big question in integration is how well do your tools integrate with each other at the workflow layer? Are you able to orchestrate that flow across them? Then at the level above that, you've got this idea of, okay, well, do I have to, for UI and UX, do I have to, you know, switch between 10 different browser windows, you know, on my laptop? Or, you know, can I have one primary system where I'm spending most of my time working, and then the other tools that I've integrated actually surface some of their capabilities directly into that UI? You know, and we're starting to see, you know, lots of examples of this throughout MarTech. I mean, even the simplest one is like, you know, if you're using like, say, Gmail or something like that, you know, you can have these apps that get embedded that, you know, add different, you know, panes and layers on top of Gmail, like Dropbox. You can, you know, manage attachments from Dropbox directly without in the Gmail interface without having to leave it. You know, so you can get deeper and deeper and better integrations that way. And then the fourth layer isn't really a technical layer per se. It's this idea of governance of saying, okay, you know, if I'm in like the HubSpot marketplace and I'm looking for apps that integrate, you know, it's really helpful for me to know, okay, which of these apps have been certified by HubSpot? What sort of scopes you know, do they have as far as, you know, access to the data? How much control do I have over that? What is the pricing architecture there? Is that clear? Is it something that I can, you know, rely on a transparency in pricing? What about support for different kinds of compliances? You know, is this a GDPR compliant app? So all this stuff around governance that I think platforms in particular can enforce the rules of apps that are, you know, authenticated into their ecosystem in a way that brings a lot of value to customers. So yeah, I think when you look across that whole spectrum of, you know, data and workflow and UI, UX and governance, there's a lot of room for integrations to be really deep and powerful.
That's great, Scott. You laid it out really well for a layman marketer like me. Okay, great. There is a data level integration, there is UI, UX, and workflow, and then the governance. So how can marketing teams put this knowledge to use when they have to adopt a tool for the users, or while they are deciding which product they should integrate their own product with? How do you go about that, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, so for the first part of that, right, like if I'm a marketer and I'm evaluating different products to integrate into my stack, I think that's really all you need to know is, hopefully that framework is helpful to say, okay, well, I've got three choices. Let me actually look at each of these three choices and understand how's the data going to be integrated. Is there a workflow connection between them? Is there any sort of shared UI? You know, do they match the governance requirements that are important to me? Yeah, I think it's just, this is part of being a savvy MarTech buyer, is evaluating your options through that lens. As far as if you're a MarTech company yourself and you're deciding, okay, well, integrations are clearly a very big deal now, you know, how do I pick which platforms and products to integrate with? I actually just did a webinar the other week with a fellow, Clement Boulan, who used to be with Point Nine Capital. It was the whole topic of like, okay, well, how do you identify the right platform to integrate to? You know, and it's all these things of like, okay, matching, the customer type, like, you know, is it a good fit customer-wise? Understanding what the distribution mechanisms are in that marketplace. Will they be able to give you an opportunity to acquire customers? What's the relationship in pricing? Like, you know, is your pricing architecture compatible with, you know, the platform's pricing architecture? So it's, you know, not too expensive or, you know, not undervaluing your product. It's you want to be very strategic in choosing which ones you invest in. And I think at this point, you're probably better off doing a few integrations with a major platforms that are really well good integrations. They're deep. They go to those four different layers we were just talking about, so that you're one of the best integrations in that ecosystem, rather than that sort of, you know, spreading peanut butter approach where you're like, we'll do a light integration here and a light integration there and a light integration of these three other products. I think at this point, you're probably better off a smaller number of integrations that are just really terrific.
Makes a lot of sense, Scott. In fact, you know, more often than not, I've often seen people making these decisions more on the basis of, say, for example, if I'm creating a product and say I'm a product that is going to plug into a CRM system, then I might probably be thinking something around which CRM has quite a bit of audience so that I can sell my product to that. Like, say, if I integrate with HubSpot CRM, then I get into the HubSpot ecosystem. So that's one way of thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
And with more and more companies, you know, kind of getting more tech, there is this constant question where marketing is becoming more and more tech or more and more automated, and it's not human enough. So how would you look at it, right? So what would be your advice to make sure that your marketing org is scalable, automated, at the same time, it is human at its core?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big mission, right? If you're heading up the marketing operations, marketing technology pillar of your organization, I think you want to be very thoughtful about, on one hand, yeah, all the automation and augmentation capabilities that you can bring to the marketing team and the company more broadly. But I think you want to be really careful about not losing touch with what the actual experience is like for customers. In particular, I mean, we could spend an entire 6 hours just talking about this one topic, but let me give you one very specific piece of advice I would highly recommend everyone to think about, which is when we think about rules-based automation, we are usually thinking about a standard process or standard case. Like, okay, well, the customer is going to come to this page, they're going to pick a segment, they're going to download a white paper, you're going to get this information from them, they're then, you know, going to ask to talk to a salesperson, and then they're going to buy. I know, some, you know, super simple flow like that. And so we can design these automation rules relatively easy to say, okay, well, you know, based on this segment, serve up this particular thing. When they then take this action, send them over to the salesperson, you know, after X number of days, you know, send the follow-up email, you know, and then after a certain period of time, it's either close lost or close won. That's fine. You can automate that. But then what happens is, even if the majority of your prospects and customers fit that flow, there's going to be exceptions. There's going to be people like, well, no, actually, I need to loop someone else in because I'm only the influencer in this. I need to bring in a buyer, you know, and all of a sudden, if like your automation keeps banging on people, you know, because it's like expecting them to behave in one way, but they've actually got a different set of interests than, you know, that automation was designed for. There's some sort of exception to be handled there. Yeah, I mean, this is the place where you see automations just, they tend to not be very effective. And if anything, actually, they can be annoying. They can actually have the inverse effect. You know, you'd hope for. They're making the experience worse for the customer. And so I think this is one of these things that just is, you know, marketing operations and marketing technology architects, you know, we have to be careful of oversimplifying these automations. And we want to make sure that really at every step along the journey, the customer has some sort of option to break out of that automation, to have some sort of, to identify themselves as an exception to that automation, and then have, you know, our company actually be able to react to that, you know, in an intelligent way. I mean, this is this is complicated stuff, but I think this is where the work is. This is where the mission is.
Absolutely. You know, I love the point that you just made, because I've experienced this firsthand, you know, when you use technology and when you're not using it for the right reasons, it's going to only amplify your problems. It's going to show up where all the systems are broken than actually helping you.
Yes. I think, you know, it's not even about systems being broken per se. It's just, you know, life is complex. Buyers are complex, you know, and sometimes the automation in the process of trying to be helpful can actually oversimplify things. And I think the more we can build in the ability to adapt to either the variations in a particular customer or their journey and, you know, sort of respect a little bit of the complexity of the process, the better off we are.
Now, Scott, you come up with this humongous set of research reports and data every year that you publish for the greater good of the marketing community worldwide. Obviously, I want to say thank you for that. But I also believe you see a lot of patterns when you connect the dots across these data sets. And based on that experience, what do you think are the top 3 to 4 things that the marketing teams are expecting MarTech vendors to improve on or offer?
Yeah, all right, that's a fun one. Well, yeah, I think so the first two are really clear. One is you need to integrate. I mean, this is a pain point that almost every marketer I've ever talked to is like, I wish these products would integrate better together. You know, this is a competitive dimension that you can win on. So build great integrations. I think the second thing is, although user experience is getting better as a discipline overall, and I'd say new MarTech products in general tend to have better user experiences than, you know, products from 20 years ago. The truth is, as an industry, we still have a long way to go. Like, can you make your software easier for marketers to use, more intuitive, more helpful? You know, so if you do great integrations and you're like a really, your UX is just spectacular. Well, I think if you do those two things, like you've kind of nailed it. You know, as we get further down the long tail of things that marketers want to do, I think probably the next most popular thing is the configurability, or the ability to change the software to map to their business, instead of the other way around, of like having to change my business to, you know, match your software. It's like the inverse Conway's law or something like that. So this is actually where I think, you know, there's been a lot of excitement around this idea of like no code. And when you sort of peel back, people throw the term no code around a lot. And now there's a lot of different products using that label. But I think if you sort of peel back the, you know, the hype, what you're really talking about is giving non-technical business users the ability to customize the way things work for their own particular business process, for their own particular needs, without having to hire, an engineer or, take a ticket and wait, a year for IT to get around to it. That they just want to be able to change and adapt the software to their needs. So I'll stop there. If you could do those three things of great integrations, great usability, great configurability for the non-technical user, knock it out of the park.
That's definitely a few of the expectations that I think marketers definitely can relate to from MarTech vendors. But let's talk about the few MarTech vendors that are already doing a few things wrong. Because I remember you recently coined a very interesting term called bullyware. You tweeted about it, Scott. And the sound of it is very fascinating and maybe a little intimidating for a lot of people who may not have had such great high school experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about what bullyware means and what prompted you to come up with that insult?
Yeah, maybe I was having flashbacks to my own high school experience. I just got in a product for hosting webinars, like a new hot new webinar product that actually looks really cool, but it wanted me to do this particular onboarding flow. Like when I went into the tool and I was just trying to look around, it's okay, you must step one, do X, and then before you can do anything else, you're going to have for step two, do Y. And I'm like, I don't want to do X and Y right now. I've got my own thing that I want to just sort of look through and figure out on my own. And it just wouldn't stop nagging me. and I don't know. So it just struck me at a time listen, I think the intent is very well-meaning, right? Having structured onboarding and having these, guided experiences to help, new users better understand your software. I think the intent's great. I think you should do that. But I think there's also a place where, you can go a little bit too far with that. And, your opinion of what the user should do or what they would want to do, may not actually be what that user should do or want to do. So give them a little bit of free will.
Right. Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. So Scott, now, let's go into this phase of rapid fire. Are you ready for that?
All right. Let's hit me.
All right. So here's the first question. What do you see in the next 5 years? Do you see a world of more softwares or less? And why do you think so?
Oh, 10 times more software, maybe 100 times more software, because it's getting easier and easier for anyone to create software.
Right. And what do you think is a better strategy? If there is a new MarTech product, what do you think is a better strategy? Should they have more integrations or should they have more reselling partners or channel partners?
Oh, that depends on your go-to-market strategy. But I would say from a barrier that most marketers face, the barrier that's the most challenging for them is having it integrate well with their existing stack.
Right. And off late, when you look at the Gartners and Forresters of the world, they have talking about almost 2020 is gone and let's be very optimistic about 2021. So are marketers being a little bit too optimistic about 2021? What do you think?
Possibly. I think this is just rather than be optimistic or pessimistic, I think the wise approach is to just accept at this moment in time, there's a lot of uncertainty, for 2021. And so the best thing you can do as a marketer is be prepared to adapt. If things go really great, take advantage of it. If things are a little bit more challenging, be prepared to roll with the punches.
Right. Makes sense. And so question number four, do you believe that software is more and more eating into the marketing world?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just eating into everything in life. It's kind of hard. I was just going to purchase a new oven. Our oven stove has finally fallen apart on us here. And like you go to the appliance store now and like these ovens, these stoves, they're all like, oh, yeah, well, we have, you know, the connection. You can like manage this through like your Google Assistant or Alexa or something. I'm like, all right. You know, if the friggin' stove is running software at this point in time, yeah, I think we can say pretty much everything in life at this point is software powered. It's a digital world.
Right. All right. So for us, you know, when it comes to MarTech, our main source that we go to is chiefmartech.com. So what is your primary source for opinions and information?
Oh, my answer there might be a little bit different than what you would think. It's not necessarily one particular publication or one particular writer. What I tend to do is I try to just follow a lot of smart people on Twitter, like including yourself, sir.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, every morning when I wake up, I'm just sort of scanning through the timeline to see what content the people I admire shared. And so I end up like reading things from like a whole variety of different publications. But yeah, there's just I rely on the crowd of trusted influencers.
Lovely, Scott. Not to remind you of the Bullyware, but maybe you should give Jest a try, because Jest does exactly that. I mean, it curates the best content for you based on your taste. So there you go. I just gave them a shout out.
Excellent.
Scott, we are in the last leg of our show, and this has been an extremely fun and knowledgeable episode to record. Jag and I are very happy that you made it to the show. We had been looking forward to having you on the podcast for a very long time. And now that it's done, we are so happy we finally scratched that itch. And I'm expecting a lot of DMs to come our way from podcast listeners to do another round of interview with you, which I definitely hope we'll do anyway, given your interest and time in the future. So before we let you get back to the rest of your day, is there any parting message for our podcast listeners, Scott?
Well, thank you again for having me. Really enjoyed the chat and would be delighted to be back anytime. I think, you know, the thing I would say is part of this has to do with the pandemic, and part of it just has to do with, you know, MarTech as a field, is there's just so much happening in our world, in our industry, and in our profession, that it's really easy to feel overwhelmed by it. And I guess I would just want to let any listener know that you're not alone, actually. Every single person, me, I mean, I am continually overwhelmed, you know, by the number of things I come across every day. And you just have to accept that this is the new reality. You're never going to get your arms around all of this, but neither is anybody else. You know, what we're learning to do as a profession is be able to just kind of like roll with this in a very fluid way and be constantly learning and constantly adapting and constantly experimenting. And I think if you accept that at some level, yeah, that's just the new normal, and that you're never going to have all the answers on this stuff, that hopefully, yeah, you can actually enjoy the ride without letting it get you too stressed out. Don't be stressed out.
And that's a very touching message, Scott. Thank you so much for saying that. I hope it will resonate with a lot of people. And where can people find you if they want to connect with you, follow you, or read your work online?
Sure. So my blog is chiefmartech.com, but that's MarTech without an H at the end. So it's chiefmartech.com. And Chief MarTech spelled that way is also my handle on Twitter. So yeah, feel free to reach out. Happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Awesome, Scott. Once again, thank you. And to the people listening to the show, we will catch you again in the next episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. Until then, it's bye from me, Manish Nepal.
And this is bye from me, Jag. Thank you and take care. Thanks again for joining us, Scott. You have a great day.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.